Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Tell you another thing I don't appreciate is this Phillies slander. I mean, not on my watch. As long as my boy here, Kyle Draper, is you know, doing the show with me. There was somebody in the Wall Street Journal that said something like, the Phillies look like they have a record number of players who could be working at a reptile shop. I was like, what?
What is that?
I don't know. That's pretty funny.
This Philly slander got to stop here. This Philly slander got to stop. How about this?
It's true, though, isn't it?
Moratorium on Philadelphia slander, whether it's the Eagles, the Phillies, Philly cream cheese.
That's right.
You know, Ben Franklin, Betsy Ross, whatever, you know?
And by the way, if you work at a reptile shop, I used to work at places
Nothing wrong with that. That's a good job.
Kind of
funny. You know, I won't slander your squads, the Niners. Uh-huh. You don't slander my teams.
Don't slander the Sacramento State Hornets. Sac State football back at home this Saturday night for a nationally televised primetime game versus Montana State, the Bobcats. Kickoff 7:30 p.m. Get your tickets at hornetsports.com. There has been some borderline slander nationally leveled at your Sacramento Kings, right? We can agree on that.
Yes.
But now we didn't see this Friday night because we're watching. Was this Friday night or Sunday night? Whenever it was. This was Michael Wilbon. I was going to say he did it at the same time.
I think it might have been, was it Sunday?
Yeah,
because
Sunday,
it was on air pre or
right.
Yeah,
so we're
show,
watching
whatever.
You Sunday night.
Yeah,
that's
we were
why
watching
we
exactly. That's why we missed that.
Michael Wilbon at halftime of the Kings-Warriors game. This is what he had to say about Sacramento Kings and their prospects for this season.
Listen, I think so. Their teams, the West is so loaded. And we were talking about this earlier. It looks like there are 12 playoff teams in the West.
Yes.
You can have eight, really six. So, but what teams care about their seeding? What teams are going to try to go wire to wire and every night out, they're just going to go after it? And there's some teams that aren't. The team that I expect to actually feel that way and approach this regular season that way, at least through the All-Star break, are the Sacramento Kings. I do. Remember, they were the third seed last year. What of all those teams I mentioned in the West still has something to prove? They know it, we know it, and the other teams know it. Nobody, we talk about disrespect, no one even mentions the Kings in a packed Western Conference. Mm. They'll mention them. I bet you if I go through the schedule right now for this here quality network, I bet you the Kings are last in number of appearances after all those teams I mentioned. We don't take, as a community, the Kings all that seriously, even though I voted De'Aaron Fox first team all NBA last season.
Right.
SGA was as deserving, if not more so. I have no complaint. But all those guys, Sabonis has got to prove that he's better than he was late in the playoff series against Golden State.
Sure.
There's lots of stuff for the Sacramento Kings to prove, and I expect to light the beam a lot.
Well, there's something to be said.
Regular
about
season, I think they could be one seed in the West.
Whoa!
My guy.
One seed.
My guy, Michael Wilbon.
He dropped a one seed bomb.
He didn't just say they were going to be improved. Keep an eye on them. He said a one seed.
Hmm.
The best team in the Western Conference. I like what he's saying. I like what he's thinking right there. He might be wrong, but I like, because, you know, when I look at the Kings.
I'm glad you said that.
No, because I'm going to be realistic.
Yes.
You know, it's going to be tough. Denver's going to be in the mix. You know, it's a lot of tough competition. And Michael Wilbon, if he's right, will look back on this day and be like, man, he had it pegged right from the jump. What, to his point, though, he said which teams are going to be hungry right from the get-go, basically, pushing to get a high seed. I would like for the Kings to start that way. I'm sure Mike Brown would like to see the Kings start that way. But I'm a little concerned by what I've seen in preseason so far. To me, at times, the Kings have looked like a team that feel like they accomplished something last year. And sure, you ended the drought, ended the streak. I understand that. But you have to be Rick Pitino, the great Louisville coach, who had obviously his issues off the court. He used to have this saying. He wanted his players to have their PhD. He wanted them to act like they were poor, to remain hungry, and to be driven. So he wanted them to have their PhD. And I tell my son this and young kids, you haven't accomplished anything yet if you're the Sacramento Kings. And I think that's what Mike Brown is trying to get into these guys. Last year is last year. You have to come back with a hungrier mentality. You have to come back with a feeling that, you know what, we didn't do anything last year. Because really you didn't. It was a fun season, but we're planning to win championships here in Sacramento now. So these Kings, that they have to have their PhD. They got to remain poor, hungry, and driven. And so what Mike Wilbon said is true, yes, but I go back to what Mike Brown said in practice today. There's only two spots solidified in the starting five. That's because he's trying to get his guys to remain poor, hungry, and driven.
I agree with you, and that's why it's so surprising to see the way the Kings have played so far, even though it's only preseason, because you were there media day and you'd
yeah.
around the team a lot more than I am. But you could see then and feel it from talking to players and seeing them. They knew that. They understand that. I didn't get the sense anyway. No one was in there like, yeah, we got this.
Right.
But they haven't played with the level of intensity right. you'd like to see. And I think part of the concern is you have an opportunity here because there is a lot of movement here with other teams' rosters, and you're bringing back your same core. So you have a head start on everybody else in the early part of this year. You know, not everybody has a lot of roster changes, but the Suns got to figure some things out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it just takes time.
It's going to take time.
And the Warriors, even with Chris Paul. Well, the Kings like, nope, we work in Sasha, but we got this. So there's an opportunity there to get off to that good start while other teams are figuring things out. And so far, based on what we've seen in the preseason, there's a chance that they aren't in position to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and that's what's so frustrating because media day, everybody said the right thing.
Yeah.
They said, you know, losing to the Warriors, that fueled us. You know, we're going to come back hungry and everything. But we haven't seen that on the floor. And I wonder what Mike Brown has seen behind the scenes in practice. I only attended, you know, the one practice. And, you know, it was spirited. Guys got after it. Coaches got on guys, too. And so I think, you know, what you would like to see from this Kings team, especially in the West, especially to your point, some teams are going to have to try and figure it out. It'll take time. Why not open up 6-0, 7-0, something
exactly.
like that?
Yes.
You know, and set some distance apart between you and your competition out there. And so I need to see the hunger from this Sacramento Kings team. They're going on the road tomorrow. It's a preseason game. I get it. Who knows who's playing, how many minutes or anything like that. But they need to set a tone, not just from the start. It needs to be, you know, 35, 40 minutes, 48 minutes throughout this game, you know? And so I'm worried. I'm a little worried because what we've seen so far isn't the response that you wanted to see. Remember, we talked about this with the Niners, right? The Niners came in the preseason. When they took the field, it looked like they were a team on the mission.
Yeah.
You know?
As soon as the starters came in,
it was like, wow.
Yeah.
And then right from the jump in the regular season as well. That's the mentality I want to see from this Sacramento Kings team.
Mm-hmm. At some point. Yeah. We've seen a little of it. I mean, that first quarter of the first
right.
game.
That was, yeah.
A little bit.
Yep.
But again, it comes down to, and I know we say this over and over, and people are tired of hearing about it, but it's crystal clear to me that Mike Brown is really concerned about what this team is doing or not doing defensively, because that's going to be the foundation for any significant improvement this year.
Yes. Because
how much better can they be offensively?
Right, right. And we the offense is going to be there. I mean, sure, it may not be, you know, averaging 119 a game or whatever it is that they averaged last season, but they'll be one of the elite offensive teams. Defensively is though where they have to make their mark. And Patrick Donaldson in our chat says he's not worried at all. That first quarter with Duarte, it was a machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe Chris Duarte is the answer. And we've seen it from Mike Brown time and time again where we're like, he's starting this guy and it's starting because he wanted a defensive presence. And so I wouldn't be surprised, you know, given health, you will see if Duarte can play, but it would not shock me to see Chris Duarte in that starting lineup come opening night. Because mm-hmm. this team needs a defensive identity. Now, Duarte's not like off-night Davion Mitchell. He's not going to harass you like that. He's not going to, you know, really get highlight reel ESPN kind of plays or anything. But he's a very solid defender. I would say above average defender. Knows positioning. Doesn't get beat by on the dribble as well. And you could tell at least he's making an effort. And so I think that's what Mike Brown wants to see from his squad. And that's why Duarte is going to be in the mix. It's not going to be about his three-point shot. He's going to earn Mike Brown's trust defensively.
Yeah. Now, today, Bam Adebayo said some really interesting things about the Heat as they relate to Heat culture. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you, we'll take a quick break, come right back with this. I want to ask you about the state of Kings culture. A lot of talk about how they established a culture last year, but that's not something you just, boom,
right.
You got it. What is the state of the Kings culture right now? What do they need it to be? What's their identity need to be going forward? We're back with that on The Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports.
Your home for Kings basketball for over 25 seasons.
Sacktown Sports.
Did you know Kyle Draper, I think we may have touched him on this as well, that this is the 100th anniversary of the Kings franchise?
Yes, I did know that. I did know
when
that.
When I first saw that, I thought that can't be right because the NBA's only been around since 46 or whatever. But yeah. I guess what they were, the Rochester Seagrams or something?
Yeah, it's
like
going,
100 years
right?
ago? That's crazy.
Yeah, and I think the Kings are doing some special things this season to honor that, you know, celebrate 100 years.
So. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they're going to retire Jerry Lucas's number. I've been working on that. I'm not getting very far.
You may try to get that done?
Yeah. But that's incredible. And it is. It's a really historic franchise. And, of course, they've been in a number of cities. But you look at the whole history of this franchise. It's this franchise has been around the block a few times.
It has. And when you say around the block, it's moved around a few times, too. Like, it's touched all parts of the country. But, you know, when you think of the Sacramento Kings, maybe you don't think of the long history, but they've had a storied history in the NBA for sure.
Very
and
rich.
Some great players,
Very
too.
Rich
yes,
history.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And Compio, our guy, said Reggie Theus, number 24. Yeah, Reggie was a great one, but we could go for, you know, decades before, like you said, Jerry Lucas, Nate Tiny
Oscar
Archer, Bar, Oscar.
Robinson.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a proud franchise, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's a
proud franchise. So big year. And for the Kings, a really significant year. As I mentioned, I heard today listening to Zachariah and Chris Watkins that Bam Adebayo said today, hey, we don't care what you guys think of us, where you expect us to finish. He said, look at us the last 4 years. All we do is win. Now, they haven't won a championship yet, but he's right. I mean, I think, two trips to the finals and two trips to the conference finals.
Yeah.
Now, this year they look like they're all in on Dame, so we'll see. But it's an interesting point, and a lot of that has to be due to, quote-unquote, Heat culture. So, as I mentioned before we took the quick break, there's been a lot of talk about the Kings and their culture, and Mike Brown brought in this new culture. Where is that right now? Because it's not something you just, hey, we had a good year, so our culture, we're set now. Where is all that, and what do you think the identity of this team needs to be going forward?
Well, I think when you look at the Kings culture, what I've seen, you know, the changes they've made, you know, going into last year and over the last year is that there's accountability, and I don't know if it was always that way beforehand. And so I think one thing you're seeing is, you know, when I go to practices, when I'm at shoot-arounds and I'm in film sessions, Mike Brown is equally as hard on Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox as he is on the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th guy. And so I think accountability is part of this organization's culture when I look at it. And that's what you want. You want that as a franchise. You want your best players to be pushed, to be held accountable. There's a reason why Mike Brown is constantly talking to the media about how good De'Aaron Fox can be defensively. He's trying to motivate him to be, you know what? You're great, but you can be even better. And so I think accountability is part of this culture. I do believe, you know, I just finished my third season, is entering my fourth season. I do feel a connectedness throughout the organization, whether it's from Monty McNair to the coaching staff, the training staff, the players, the marketing. Like, it feels more like a family, I would say, over this last year or so. And so I think culture for this Kings team is developing still, though. Let's talk about what we want this team to be on the floor. In my mind, and I'm sure in some of the coaches' minds as well, you want teams to feel you. This is why Mike Brown talks about physicality all the time. You want teams after a game to know, man, they gave us everything they had. Sort of like they did in the playoffs against the Warriors, earning the respect of Draymond. And so there used to be a feeling that when you come to Sacramento, get up a little early and this team will fold. Or you come to Sacramento in a tight game late, the Kings will make a mistake, lose the ball, turn it over, or whatever. The Kings will kingdoms. You know, they'll you know, it's like, you know, like we said, the Browns and all these other, you know,
they'll
teams.
Beat themselves.
They'll beat themselves at the end. And so I think now the culture is when you come to Sacramento, you're in for a dogfight. And I think that's something we've seen change over the last year, thanks to Mike Brown and some of the results we've seen on the floor.
To me, culture in sports, and it extends to business. And I think it started with business. It was a business term, yeah. And Bill Walsh brought it into sports. What it means, essentially, is that everybody in the organization, ideally, has the same goals in mind. We're mm-hmm. trying to win. And you see now that with the Kings, everybody has a clear idea. We want to win, and this is how we're doing it, and there's buy-in from everybody.
Right, right.
Right, and but that doesn't just automatically continue. And that's why I think Mike Brown in some ways maybe got too much credit for it. He gets a ton of credit, but Monty gets credit and the players for looking at that going, okay, I'm in. Without them, it doesn't matter.
Right.
So now they're being asked to do more. It's a really crucial moment in the, if you will, the culture of this team because, hey, guys, last year we did this. If we want to get to where we need to get to as a team, we need to start doing this and raise the level defensively and get more physical, as you say. And I think that's where it is right now. I think the players are buying in, but they're finding it's more than just wanting to do it that's required here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, last year the coaching staff did a great job, you know, pushing the players. But when you talk about culture, you talked about heat culture. One of the reasons heat culture is what it is because the players push themselves also. So I think that's the next step for this Kings team. Who's the player? Is it De'Aaron Fox? Is it Domas? I think they're trying to get there. Who's the player that holds other players accountable as well? And so is an extension of Mike Brown out there on the floor in practice, that kind of thing. And so I think last year, you know, Mike Brown and his new staff, new coaching staff, they were a big reason why the culture changed. But now if we want to sustain it, a coach can only say too much. A coach can only go to the well with his motivational speeches too much.
Yeah.
It's on the players, I think. And so I need the players to take ownership this season of that Kings culture to understand that, you know what, when a team comes play inside Golden 1 Center, they shouldn't win. You know, that can't happen. And so I think that's a player's thing. I know the coaches are trying to get them there. I think that's on the players, though, that we see that culture play out.
And Kyle, I hope no one does. I could understand why someone might hear this and say, why are the team was great last year. This is negative. But it's not negative. It's a good problem to have because for years before you were here, the Kings didn't have problems like this because it was a matter of what are we doing?
Right, right.
No one knows what we're doing. Now it's part of the growing pains of becoming a really good team. It's necessary.
I got 2 points on that. You know, before last season, the difference between, you know, my first couple of years and last season, and players have talked to me about it, coaches as well, when a player walks in that door, they know what's expected of them. They know what they're doing. They know what the practice plan is. Like, there's a vision that they see. Beforehand, it was sort of guys didn't know their roles, walk into the building, and it was sort of almost a free-for-all.
And then everyone's going their own
way. You know, now
it's
a more cohesive unit. And so that's one thing that you see from this team. But also, if we're talking, and Mike Brown is, if we're talking about championship, if there's a reason why Denver, Boston, Miami, their goal isn't just to make the playoffs. Their goal is to be the best team in the NBA, to be the best they can be. And I think that's the message Mike Brown is trying to get into these guys. Like I said, they didn't accomplish, you know, anything last year. Sure, you made the playoffs first round, whip the freaking do. We need to, if we want to be a championship,
right.
Because you play these games to win a championship. You don't play to win a streak, to end a streak. You don't play to sell a couple of extra tickets in the playoffs. You play to raise a banner. And that's what this franchise, I'm a firm believer in elevating the expectations, raising the expectations for this team. Mm-hmm. If you only expect to get to the playoffs, then that's as far as you go. Denver came into last season with a mission. They wanted to get to the championship. They wanted to be NBA Finals champions. And we saw it pretty much very early on, right from the get-go. They were pretty much at the top of the Western Conference the entire time. And Mike Malone and company, they never lost sight of that.
And there were a number of times last year where Mike Malone called out his team, where he said that we can't win like this because they got ahead. They were ahead in the standings, and then they lost some games where it didn't look like they were giving their best effort. And he was right there every time they did that. Said, we're not going to win that way, guys. We can't win this way. It's interesting because I know Windhorst has joked about this. For Mike Brown, who is a defensive coach, it must be really hard to see this team struggle at that end.
Right.
You know? I mean, he's a perfect coach because he can help them with that, but it's got to be hard for
him. Right, exactly. I would imagine. I mean, sure, you're winning games and everything last season. You're winning 48 games, but it's not the way that you want your team playing. And so I think that's why we're seeing a more vocal Mike Brown, a guy that's changing up the lineups, a guy that's harping on the lineups and players in the media and everything like that, because he understands. Sure, offense is nice and everything like that, but ultimately, this team has to be better defensively if they're going to make a deep playoff run. So I'm all for it. I'm all for it, you know. If these guys are comfortable and feeling good, Mike Brown's making them uncomfortable. And, you know, it's funny. He said after practice today, everything they do has a purpose. So he's not just tinkering with the lineup just to see, you know, he's trying to send a message. He's trying to get something out of this move, and we'll see what happens tomorrow night with it.
Yeah, because they're trying to build something sustainable, not just, hey, we had a good year last year. How about that? High five. Now what? I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
So now the hard work is really starting, isn't it?
And you're not going to sneak up on anybody, right? Teams know all about the Kings right now.
Mm-hmm. We'll return our focus to the 49ers when we come right back. If no CMC, what's plan B for the 49ers next? Kyle Draper and Whitey Gleason, Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports.
Sacramento's official home for the San Francisco 49ers.
Sacktown Sports.
All right, you know what stinks about that 49er loss to the Browns? And then the Cowboys winning last night. Cowboys are back in the NFC contender picture. They wormed their way back in. But this really stinks, Kyle. I've heard it suggested, even Matt Maiocco, who doesn't throw things around, even he wrote that it's possible the 49ers celebrated that win over the Cowboys a little more than they should have. Maybe they weren't quite as focused or as prepared for the Browns as they should have been. And I can't believe that could happen to a team this good with Super Bowl aspirations that they could actually let that happen. I can't believe that happened. Come on.
What?
This isn't some young team that's shocking the world that wasn't supposed to win any games. This is a veteran team that certainly would know better.
You would think.
I would think.
You would think. I mean, the Niners, they're all about the Super Bowl, right? They're all about, you know, capturing home field advantage in the NFC. And that's what's so disappointing about this loss, Whitey, because they came out like gangbusters all season long. You know, they look like a well-oiled machine, a team on a mission. And I will say, it's a lot easier to get up for the Cowboys than the Cleveland Browns and P.J. Walker.
Yes.
You know, it just is. And that's why the NFL, it's hard to go undefeated. I can say the same thing about the Eagles. It happens. And so that's why it's very rare for a team to go undefeated in the season.
I know.
And so you can't just all of a sudden, I don't believe this team could do such a thing. What are they doing? They're missing out on what's big here. You know, they're not going to win every game.
You're not going to win every game.
No,
but they should have won that game.
This is your problem. This is your problem. And this is a problem with 49ers fans right here.
What's that?
I'm going to tell you straight up.
What's our problem?
What's the problem? You guys are living on a roller coaster right now. You got to stay even keel. Act like you're a great team. You don't see Chiefs fans after losing week one say, oh my gosh, how could they lose?
The Chiefs have won two Super Bowls.
Because they know who they are, Whitey. And Niners fans, you got to stop riding that roller coaster. When your team is good, they're good. Okay. But you ain't got to dance in the street like you guys ain't never won a Super Bowl before. And when they're bad, which they were this week, don't get too low. Stay even keeled. You know, it's all about the postseason, right?
Right. Right. But that's the problem.
So why are you celebrating 3-0, 4-0, 5-0?
Because 49er fans, especially people who have been 49er fans for a long time, after they won, you know, four Super Bowls, you get to a point where you feel like it's supposed to happen. Then you have a long drought where it doesn't happen for a long time and you come close. Of course, they won the fifth. But then a long drought, and then you come so close with Harbaugh. And then with Shanahan, it's like, finally,
yeah,
they're back. 2019, wow, they're ahead of schedule, going to the Super Bowl. Here we go. They got the lead in the fourth quarter, and they lost. So you get a little desperate. Well, they're going to win the Super Bowl, right? 2020, that year was terrible. Well, it was a pandemic year. That's okay. 2021, well, they got Trey Lance. That didn't work. Hey, they're back in the conference championship game. And then the next year, back in the conference championship game. Last year felt like, okay, this is the year. So if you're a 49er fan, I think for a lot of 49er fans, there's a sense of desperation almost because it's going to happen, right? I mean, Shanahan turned things around, but they still have a 1-1 yet. And then they're losing to the Browns because they didn't take them seriously. It's frustrating.
So they need some therapy is what you're saying.
They need a Super Bowl. Some Lombardi therapy. That's all they need.
Yeah, but here's the problem. They're taking their fandom a little too far. Because if it doesn't happen.
This is someone from Philly saying that.
Exactly.
Booing Santa Claus, throwing snowballs. Not that you
I'm
do.
My own individual, though, Whitey.
I know that.
I'm objective. I'm a level-headed sports fan, which we all should be. But when you ride the roller coaster, when you live and die on what happens every Sunday, this is what happens.
It's called a fan.
It's called, no. Yeah, exactly. Let's look up the definition of a fanatic.
Oh, I know.
Exactly. You're taking it a little too far. It's week 6 in October. It's in September and October. So you're getting way too high, Niners Nation, and you're getting way too low after a loss. Just chill. Let it play out. And now if this was a playoff game and you lost, I get it. It's crushing. But, man, if we're going to do this for 9 more weeks, we're in some trouble because this won't be the only game the Niners lose.
No, but it's harder to withstand losses like that when similar losses over the last couple of seasons have been the ones that have knocked you out. Now, you're right, of course. You lose to Cleveland, oh, well. But those narrow losses, they have a way of coming back to bite you. And all of a sudden, it's the NFC Championship game and they're on the road because, oh, they didn't take the Browns seriously enough. So that's what fans get anxious about. My mother-in-law literally could not watch the end of the game.
Let me ask you this.
Then you got Jake Moody and...
Let me ask you this.
He missed 2 field goals, Kyle. I don't know if you...
Let me ask you this. Now, if the Eagles would have won, I'd be with you. You let one go. Now you got to play catch up. You got to win out. But the Eagles did you a favor.
I know.
And so if I'm an Eagles fan, you know, I'm upset. Like, darn, we had the Niners. We were up a game on them. If we would have won, we would have been a full game.
Cuts
and
both
we
ways.
Would have played them.
Cuts
and
both
so
ways.
We could have had 2. But as a Niners fan, you're still in good shape. You're still good. The game you got to win is December 3rd. Now you lose that game. Then if you want to, you know, oh, man, here we go again. We're going to be on the road in the playoffs. Okay, I get it. But this is week 6 against
a chance to pass the Eagles this year. Squandered.
So let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
Because going into the week, I think everybody considered the Niners Super Bowl favorites, at least to get to the Super Bowl.
Anybody who actually watched the games yet.
Where do you have the Niners right now?
They're still right up there. But it's a little more muddled. It's not as clear that they're that much better than everybody as it appeared
really?
They were.
Really? So
whether that was true or not, I don't know.
Say that again? Say that again?
It's not as clear as it was that they're better than everybody
All
else.
I heard the first 5 weeks of the season is the Niners, by far, they're the best team out there.
That's right.
You're a game ahead of the Detroit Lions.
The Lions are good this year.
And so I think and what Niners Nation is feeling right now is that, maybe we aren't as good as we thought.
Sure.
Maybe we aren't as vincible as we thought.
Not if the rookie kicker can't make a kick, can't make a field goal. Yeah, it's a little disconcerting. And now you've got Christian McCaffrey. Is he going to play? I know Emil joined us and said, doesn't look bad. Maybe he plays. Here's the... where I was going with all this. What happens if CMC can't play? You know, it looks like Elijah Mitchell is back and he actually would pass Jordan Mason on the depth chart.
Okay.
Even though Mason played more in the last game, that was because Elijah Mitchell was
just
back.
Coming back. Yeah.
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 And they like both those guys, but obviously it's a far cry from CMC.
Yeah. They need CMC. But I've said, you know, earlier today, I would rest CMC this week. If that oblique is still bothering him.
I kind of like that.
I would rest him this week. And I understand you want home field advantage. You don't want to give away games or anything like that. But Minnesota is not a good team. Their defense isn't good. And you still should be able to move the ball with Elijah Mitchell back there and the weapons that you have. And so I would rest CMC this week. And then we'll see. It'll be interesting. Because once Debo got hurt, once CMC got hurt, that offense was just putrid. Brock Purdy looked like PJ Walker out there. You know? No, but seriously, CMC is the engine of this team. And so if you keep driving this car, you know, for 300,000 miles without an oil change or a tune-up or anything, you're going to have an issue. And so this is a week to get CMC some extra rest. Get him a little tune-up, some sort of oil change or something like that, and then bring him back for that big game against the Bengals.
By the way, I was just noticing this here as you were speaking. Since week three, defensive players have racked up more than $75,000 in fines due to illegal hits on Christian McCaffrey or gestures toward him. That kitty is likely to grow this week after the Browns were flagged for a pair of face mask fouls against McCaffrey on San Francisco's opening drive. So I just...
Hey, if CMC is going to keep running like that, you're trying to win a football game, Whitey.
I know that.
You're trying to win a game. This isn't checkers. This isn't tiddlywinks or anything. This is football.
And
if CMC is going
to
run as hard as he runs, he delivers a lot of punishment out there. He's one of the toughest guys to bring down. So I think these players, they're doing whatever it takes to get him down.
They are.
They're not doing whatever it takes to knock him out of the game. They're doing whatever it takes to get him down.
So they all feel badly, all those guys that got those fines?
Not at all.
Meanwhile, speaking of injuries, the Jets continue to talk about an Aaron Rodgers comeback. I don't know. Kyle, I'm not buying it yet. I'm not all the way there on the Aaron Rodgers miracle. We'll kick that around next on The Drive, guys. Sacktown Sports. Hey, we got an update today on Christian McCaffrey, just talking about Christian McCaffrey. And it's interesting because the 49ers are giving us some information, but we're not getting specifics on the injury. Maybe some of that is because some of those spirited defenders, you know, you don't want them to know exactly what's wrong so they,
right.
So
they can target that injury
sneak
area.
Yeah. It's the third rib. But Christian McCaffrey avoided long-term injury, according to Adam Schefter, and he has a chance to play Monday night, a chance to play. So it sounds like the way this is being framed, the 49ers are feeling like, okay, may have dodged a bullet here. It's nothing long term, but until we know really what it is, other than an oblique rib injury, it's going to be hard to know what kind of shape he's going to be into play this week and in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and when you look at CMC, you know, I thought Dallas did a tremendous job, obviously Cleveland as well. Shanahan had been using him a lot in both the run game and the pass game. And so it makes sense to give him a week off, let him get, you know, this team should still be good enough, Whitey, to win without Christian McCaffrey. Now, if this offense looks pedestrian again come Monday night, then we got some issues.
In
the short term.
Yeah,
exactly.
I
mean, they should be able to get through this week against Minnesota without CMC.
Speaking of comebacks, Aaron Rodgers said today he's ahead of schedule, cautioned he still has many hurdles to clear before he'll be back on the field, but there's still a hope, and it sounds like Aaron Rodgers' goal and thought in his head is that he could be back if the Jets are in the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers could be back this year. That's great, and it gives him something positive to focus on, and it gives his teammates hope. So, yeah, that would be a wonderful story. I just don't think it's realistic.
I don't think it's realistic. I mean, to come back, you know, from an Achilles, like, even if he did come back, he might not ever be the same quarterback again. An Achilles is something you don't play with. An Achilles, if I'm correct, is what ended Kobe Bryant's career in basketball, really. And he's talking about coming back in what, 4 months?
Yeah.
I mean,
he had surgery September 13th, 5 weeks ago. Medical experts say it takes 3 months for the Achilles tendon to heal properly, and that at that point, that's when an athlete can start rehab, and that usually takes another few months. And experts say if you have the surgery, it's healed. Then if you overwork that, that can cause permanent stretching of it, and then the whole thing's out of whack. And if Rodgers plays this season, it would be less than 4 months from surgery. to return.
Wow.
So good for him for trying to do something no one's done. There's a reason no one's done it. It can't be done.
But he has the best doctors and, you know, medicine. And
he's a goofball. Right?
No, he did say this, though. I'm looking at some of the quotes here. He said, we're kind of a way ahead in even just saying that. They're just markers. They saw me walk without crutches and throw in the field. Another marker is going to be jogging. Another marker is going to be pregame workout, get on practice field. It's going to take time. So he said, pump the brakes just a little bit. But he's leaving that door open. And that's the thing that's, you know, if I'm a Jets fan, he's like, you know, sort of toying with your emotions a little bit, right? By still giving you hope.
And I get the upside. Maybe that inspires his teammates to play better. Hey, if we keep playing well, who knows? Aaron could be back.
We got Aaron back.
I understand that. There's upside. And it's good for anybody if you're dealing with anything, you know, physically, if you have a positive attitude, and I'll be back before anyone thinks. That's good for you. But just, I mean, playing pro football in January, good for you, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. And but this is a way for Aaron Rodgers to keep his name out there, too. He's going on Pat McAfee's show all the time.
Did you see McAfee said last week he's paid him $1 million?
$1 million. You know, I'm not a McAfee guy. I'm not an Aaron Rodgers guy. So I have never actually watched Pat McAfee. Like, soon as I see him on my TV, I usually change the channel because I'm just not a fan.
Uh-huh.
And so, but $1 million. Think about that.
And maybe that's just, you know, exaggerated to get people talking
about
it. And
so it's not Pat McAfee paying him $1 million either. It's ESPN paying him $1 million. And given what they are paying Pat McAfee, also, they're putting a lot of money into that show.
What in your mind is the most impressive, dramatic, heroic return from an injury in sports? Whether it was long-term, short-term, one game.
That's a great question.
Paul Pierce coming
out. Paul Pierce with the wheelchair and everything. I don't know. He may have had a bathroom issue. Yeah, I don't know. Depending on who you talk to.
Because that's not it.
Right, right.
That's one end of the spectrum.
I would say, let me try to think. You know, Kobe finishing out the game, shooting the free throws with the Achilles.
Klay Thompson did that too in the finals.
Klay Thompson. Yep, as well. You know, we can go obviously back to Willis Reed.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
It's amazing that that was way, way, way back, and people
mention that, you know,
because he played in a game,
right? Yeah. I would say, you know, maybe the Jordan flu game, but now the people are saying he didn't have the flu, you know, like, you know, was it a food poisoning?
He wasn't feeling good, whatever,
partying too much,
whatever.
And he had a pretty good game, so that was it. I'm trying to think what else.
I think, and when I say this, you go, the Alex Smith.
Oh, yeah.
They should rename the comeback player.
Yeah, coming back from that.
The Alex Smith Award, I think.
Yeah, I agree. That was tremendous what he had to do to come back. You saw the pictures of his leg and everything.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, 10 on YouTube says Rondo playing after his elbow popped out. It was a series against Miami, and, you know, Dwayne Wade landed on his elbow and, you know, his elbow got jacked up. He finished that game out, but that changed that series. Miami went on to win that series. Some argued that Rondo was the best player in that series. And so, there's been a lot of great performances where guys have sort of gutted it out. Players have gutted it out to finish games or come back.
You ever seen this? I'm not going to show it to you here, but Alan Ray on Villanova.
Alan Ray.
Do you remember that? Yeah. In 2006, he was playing, I think it was in the NCAAs, and someone got a finger in there, and his eye actually exited the socket.
I did not see that. Okay. Really?
Oh, it's not for everybody.
Did somebody slow-mo it and everything, too?
It's right here if you want to see it. But
play
it's
like, real quick, Whitey. Play it. Play that thing.
I apologize to you listening here. Let's see. I'm not sure where
his
it is.
His eye came out the
somebody
socket?
Somebody is reaching
get out of here.
Oh, no.
And there you go. There it is.
Boy.
There it is. That's a beautiful
Oh, my God.
Alan Ray, everybody.
Wow. Ouch. I don't think I can unsee that now.
No, you can't. You can't. And I think he was okay.
Like, it was out. And it was.
You play, you know, basketball. Sometimes you somebody, swipe and then you get somebody in the eye, and it was just the right angle where, whoop.
You remember when you ever watched Pee Wee's Big
Rabbit.
Top Adventure
uh-huh.
with Large Marge and her eyes popped out?
Uh-huh.
Like, that's what that Alan Ray situation looked like. The eye came out. To me, the greatest comeback, and Tin wrote this in our YouTube chat, Tiger Woods, his comeback from the back, the leg, everything, and winning
yeah.
the tournament.
Like, yeah, that to was me, the open in San Diego,
right? Torrey Pines, was it?
Yeah. And he apparently broke his leg, and he yeah. asked a doctor, and the doctor said, "You can't play." And he said, "Play, I'm going to win."
And right.
He did.
Yeah, and he yeah. did. Yeah. yeah. Tiger Woods, just his, you know, everything, the leg, the car crash, like uh-huh. all that, the scandal, you know, mm-hmm. to me, that's probably the greatest comeback in my era.
Yep.
That yeah. was that was pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that, you know, I got the 14-year-old son, and so he doesn't, you know Tiger Woods really, because Tiger's heyday was before him. But when Tiger won, what was it, the Tour Championship at Eastlake in 2019, I think it was, and everybody that this was following him up the 18th fairway and everything, and me and my son are sitting at home watching that, just for my son to be able to see that, just to get a taste of Tiger mania. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know how it is. When we grew up, Tiger Woods, you know, early, late 90s, early 2000s, I mean, he was the biggest star in the world.
You remember the Pebble Beach, what was it, I should know the year, 2000, when he won by 15 strokes
yeah,
or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever heard the story about how he almost got DQ'd?
No.
Okay, this was told to me by a guy on tour. I don't know if it's true, but a guy on tour told me this story. So day one or two is Pebble Beach, so there's fog. So they have a fog delay. Tiger's on 18 and hits tee shot in the water. There's fog delay. They got to go back to the hotel room. Tiger takes all the golf balls to the hotel room.
Yeah.
And he's like practicing putting. Then it's like, okay, come back to the course. And Stevie doesn't know that there's no more golf balls. So actually, he hadn't teed it off into the water yet. So they come back. Tiger tees off, hits it in the water, turns to Stevie. Stevie has one golf ball. And the guy told David Sutherland, who's local and was on tour, he and his brother both, he told me the story. He says, if you see the video of it, you can see Stevie takes the ball and you can see him hesitate for a moment, like, should I tell him? This is the last,
yeah.
and he gives him the ball and doesn't say anything. If Tiger hits that ball in the water, he's
DQ'd
because there's
no more balls.
Yeah, he stripes it, goes on, wins the tournament by 15.
Played shots. That with that same ball the rest
yeah.
of the
time.
Wow.
Yeah, because it was 18. So
it was 18.
Up.
Okay, all right,
yeah,
he was done.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah. Good move by Stevie not to tell him, though, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
you don't want that in your head, you
right,
know, when
right.
you're playing
Do
golf.
I tell him or?
I never knew yeah. that. That's an interesting story. Wow.
Yeah.
History could have been different.
Certainly could have been. Yeah. How about Joe Theismann?
Yes.
Football?
Yeah, that injury. Yeah, yeah mm-hmm. that was gruesome. Mm-hmm. That was gruesome.
But Alex Smith, to me, is just the fact that he didn't have to come back. And then when he came yeah. back, it's almost like, I came back, I played, I'm good.
Right.
I just want to prove
right.
to myself and everyone, mostly himself, that I can
yeah.
do it.
Yeah. You know, Paul George, too. We can
yeah.
bring up Paul George. You know, speaking of leg injuries, you know, him coming back and playing at an all-star level. You know, all NBA kind of level, that's a tremendous comeback.
So if
also.
Aaron Rodgers does that, that would be, if he comes back and plays okay and doesn't get hurt, that would shoot right to the
yeah,
whether
I would
it should
think,
or not, right?
Yeah,
that would be number one.
Number one.
People will talk about it forever.
An
Sorry,
Achilles
Willis Reed.
In your back, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's not going to happen. If you believe in that, you believe in UFOs like Aaron Rodgers does.
Bigfoot.
You believe that mating dolphins can help you heal faster like Aaron Rodgers does, but... Good for him. When we come back, what Hollinger wrote about the Kings finishing 11th that Kyle, I think he may be right about. Next here, Drive Guy, Sacktown Sports.